This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj. Welcome back, Waj.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. So there are plenty of weeks over the course of the past two years when I've been like, you know, this week, unlike usual, I couldn't actually obsessively follow everything. I didn't really follow what's going on. But then when I say that, usually it means I've at least like, you know, followed Twitter or like kind of kept aware of what was going on, even if I didn't like follow every news article. Well, this week I'm saying that and I mean it. I have basically no idea what's going on anywhere in the world since I think Thursday. Because there's been a lot going on with the Nans case, good and bad. And I have basically blocked out Trump and everything about him past week, which, you know, I guess I'd say it's kind of nice, but...
Well, thankfully, I am here for you and Rabia. And also, we are in the midst of doing this conversation on the heels of not just the federal sentencing, but what just dropped, Susan, and I just informed you that New York is charging Paul Manafort with 16 crimes. These are state-level crimes, which means that if he's convicted, President Trump cannot pardon him. And this was an insurance play that, you know, we've been talking about for about 2 months. Bloomberg, I think, reported first that basically New York, just in case, the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance, just had this up his sleeve, just in case they were going to drop this. And they did drop it. He's been charged with mortgage fraud and like more than a dozen other state felonies. And this is on the heels, of course, of what just Amy Jackson did of the federal district court. She sentenced Mr. Manafort on two conspiracy counts, a host of crimes, money laundering, obstruction of justice, failing to disclose lobbying work. And count one gave him 60 months with 30 months concurrent with the sentence he received recently from Judge Ellis. And then count two was 13 months to run consecutive to count one. And the federal sentence he received in Judge Ellis's court. So,
but let's back up a bit for what happened in Judge Ellis's court last week.
Oh, yeah, yeah. George, I mean, you know, the blameless life.
Yeah. Well, if you'll recall, he was originally sentenced in one place and then in D.C. And then Manafort actually instigated the split trials, which I was somewhat surprised by because that's going to increase his attorney's cost by a lot. But he ended up having sort of parallel cases in D.C. and EDVA in the Alexandria. And he got sentenced first in the Alexander case last week. And that was where he was convicted after trial, and as opposed to the one before Judge Berman, where it was a plea deal. Now, Judge Ellis had very much inserted himself into the trial for Manafort.
You know, from the beginning, just the comments that he made, the jibes at the Mueller investigation, talking about the scope. It seemed at times he was almost being defense counsel, not just of Manafort, but also Donald Trump.
Yeah, he did go far. I wouldn't say he was defense counsel. He was more like his own counsel co-opposing the defense the prosecution at times.
Right.
It was a little strange. It happens sometimes, but it was very strange to see such a high profile case to see him do that. And it was a little bit unsettling. He definitely was not advocating for Manafort or for Trump. It was not that kind of vibe that I got, and I wouldn't imagine any federal court doing that. But he was very much expressing some sort of hostility towards the prosecution, towards special counsel's office.
Well, the reason I was a little bit more strong in my language is if you look at the sentencing that Judge Ellis gave Manafort, it was 47 months for eight felony counts of tax evasion, bank fraud, and failure to disclose a foreign bank account. And the recommendation was
the guidelines.
24. Yeah, the guidelines was 18 to 24 years. So we went from 18 to 24 years to 47 months. And last week, if you all recall, like everyone, I mean, there was a kind of across the board that people were just outraged by the sentence and the fact that Judge Ellis added, you know, during his sentencing that Paul Manafort had largely led a, quote, blameless life. And like, word, what type of life are you observing? Because to me, this seems like a blame-filled, blameworthy life where this guy is just like can't help but committing crimes, even as he's pled guilty to committing crimes and is sitting in jail. That's why I think, you know, this Judge Ellis sentencing from last week compared to not just the sentencing today, but also Judge Amy Jackson's very strong rebuke of Manafort in court. I don't know if you followed some of her quotes, they were pretty damn stinging.
I did a little, but for Ellis, I will give some context. He is, in a number of white collar cases, I would say it's not unusual at all to see him go below guidelines. And in general, I would not say he is known. He definitely has a reputation as a harsh sentencer. He's more not, I wouldn't call him lenient, but he definitely, he's not a judge that would come to mind thinking of someone who's known for harsher than called for punishments. So him going below guidelines, especially in a white collar case, that doesn't surprise me. And I would agree that 18 years is too long for what Manafort did. I think they're very, very serious crimes. But in general, the guidelines, I think, give preposterously long ranges. But, you know, it's a different subject, different podcast.
I agree with you, actually. I agree with you. I think the outrage that also came about when it came to communities of color is I think most people realize that the sentencing guidelines for this stuff is just way too long, like 18 to 24 years in prison. And, you know, it's questionable whether or not there's any quote unquote rehabilitation. But when you see like black and brown people, you know, serving much longer time for possession of, say, crack. And then you see specifically Paul Manafort and his history of like egregious crimes and his bad behavior, even like in the last 2 years. And then you see Judge Ellis's conduct, as you mentioned, and you see the fact that he said he went out of his way to say, oh, you've led a blameless life. And the fact that even though it seemed that prosecutors are recommending that, you know, 18 to 24, which agreed is egregious, the fact that he only went to 47 months, that was just a big sting to a lot of Americans who were looking for justice.
Yeah. Point being, 47 months is not the objection I have. It's that Ellis's comments were really shocking to me. The fact that he unnecessarily went out to say that Manafort had, a quote, blameless life, and he was a generous person. As Judge Berman pointed out today, he was generous with stolen money. But Ellis's comments were even more shocking because Manafort gave a statement in Virginia, and he did not express remorse or apologize. And in fact, Ellis even commented on, like, I was surprised not to hear you express regret for your actions. So, like, part of me thinks that, like, that Ellis might have really been planning to come in with something, like, really insane, like 15 months. And then when Manafort didn't apologize, he was like, well, shit, now I got to add 30 months for that, because how dare you not apologize? I'm making that up. But like, I kind of wonder.
I have to penalize you for your blameless life.
I think that, like, I can't imagine any judge not being upset about hearing a defendant not express remorse, especially under these circumstances when he's pled guilty in D.C. So it's not even a question of him claiming innocence.
And also, I just got some choice quotes for the listeners from Judge Amy Berman Jackson. Quote, the Office of Special Counsel proved beyond a preponderance of evidence that Mr. Manafort intentionally gave false testimony with respect to the matter, which was one of several matters in regards to false statements with regards to Mr. Kilimnik. And we really want to see what's going to go on with that, because for those of you who remember, allegedly Paul Manafort and his deputy chair, Rick Gates, who has already pled guilty, met with Konstantin Kilimnik, who has a special relationship with Oleg Deripaska, Russian oligarch, who's buddies with Putin. And allegedly they gave him both public and private polling data. This is, again, when he was campaign chair. You should ask yourself, why the hell is a campaign chair of Donald Trump giving public and private polling data to essentially a Russian asset? Also, a Ukraine peace plan was also basically given to Kilimnik to give to Deripaska. And Deripaska had loaned millions of dollars to Manafort. And allegedly, Manafort was trying to get good with Deripaska again. It's such a big whopper if you just sit there and think about it for 1 second. You know, Susan, like, I know we're going to get into, like, so many other threats. But the fact that the President Trump's campaign chair and deputy campaign chair is doing just that, wouldn't that, like, in normal times, just be the story of the month?
The fact that so many senior people in Trump's campaign and administration are just permagrifters, yeah, that should be the scandal of the century. And it's apparently not, because everyone just assumes people around him are engaged in all kinds of fraud and deception all the time. So it's not really that shocking. But cumulatively, it's pretty shocking. Manafort's whole life is about running a fraud, as you've seen. Like, it's the New York charges are based on his conduct, nothing to do with Trump. He is a permanent fraudster.
And that's what Jackson said. She goes, Manafort's actions have shown his, quote, ongoing contempt for and the belief that he had the right to manipulate these proceedings. And she had these two great, great zingers. And I think Trump is going to hit her later today in a tweet for one of them. He has to. She said, court is one of those places, quote, where facts still matter. And this is the one, this quote is the one that I think that Trump is going to really be livid about. She slammed Manafort and his lawyers for making, quote, unsubstantiated claims that Manafort was only charged by Mueller's office because they couldn't charge him with anything else related to the campaign. Quote, the non-collusion mantra is simply a non sequitur, end quote. And I think that is one of the choice quotes from today, because it kind of really hits at this interference that Trump and his cronies are doing. No collusion, no collusion, see, no collusion. And she literally says the non-collusion mantra is simply a non sequitur.
Well, it is, though, because it's irrelevant to what Manafort's charged with.
But it doesn't matter, because they're running interference, right, in yeah. social media and also through Fox News. That, like, no collusion, no collusion. And meanwhile,
they're
you're
trying
like,
to block all the other crimes they've committed from being discovered by Hank. Oh, I did see one tweet from Trump that was like, it was about the New York investigation, not into Manafort, but into, I think, Trump Organization. And he was like, the great witch hunt hoax continues. Now, of course, this investigation has presumably something to do with Russia or the Russian collusion. So now witch hunt is just code for anyone looking at any wrongdoing Trump is accused of.
Yeah, literally anything. And he's ramped it up. And we've mentioned this on the show before. Look, he's gone against law enforcement, judges. He's gone against the Democrats. And now he's already saying that the election in 2020, that's 2 years away, is rigged. Which, by the way, people forget is exactly what he did 2 weeks leading up to the 2016 election, because he thought he was going to lose. So he said, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. And he wanted to save face and walk away. My fear, and I've expressed this and people thought I was laughing and people thought I was joking, is if he sows the seed of doubt, which is what authoritarians do in everything, in every institution, says that everyone is against me and hence everyone is against MAGA and is everyone against 35% of the people. And if he loses the 2020 election, will he leave?
Well, will he claim that he didn't lose at all?
That's what I'm saying. It's all rigged.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's dangerous from all sides if we have that little faith in institutions. I'm not saying I don't have concerns, but it's also a convenient fallback excuse. He even doesn't plan to challenge the actual results. He can at least leave office and claim that was, all hoax and conspiracy against him by the deep state.
Because of his vain, fickle ego.
Yes.
Would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? I know Susan and I and Waj wouldn't. So with Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes.
Everlane is a clothing company. They're not any clothing company. They make essentials. They make basics that you need. The kind of stuff that every wardrobe doesn't have enough of. But they make it with radical transparency. They disclose their pricing so you know what they're paying for these clothes and that you are paying a fair price. And while I can't speak for the men's clothes, the women's items are great. Sweaters, the jeans, the stuff that you need to have on a day-to-day basis and that you can dress up in a million different ways.
Quality cotton basics, premium Japanese denim. These are just some of the qualities and fibers that they use for men's shirts. And they're made at the world's cleanest denim factory, perfectly fit Oxford shirts, outerwear made from recycled water bottles. I mean, who doesn't love a good green conscious company like Everlane?
And take their Cotton Crew t-shirt. It is exactly what a crew t-shirt should be. Simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. And right now, you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/45th. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/45th. Everlane.com/45th.
Sometimes you just like sit there and like exhale, because I know it's like we talk about this every week, and it just hit me again that this man is the president of the United States of America.
That'll be with us for the rest of our life. One day, you're going to explain to your kids what happened and how this could have happened.
You think he's going to pardon Manafort for the federal crimes?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, good on New York. Good on New York.
But not until he's about to leave office, probably. So that'll be a little while. I mean, he's now, so I don't know the exact, I can't do math. I'm not going to do math right now. But the grand total looks like what after, good time reduction probably puts him in 7.5, or is that before?
Yeah, 7.5 with time served, if you just do all the math.
Okay, so take off 15% from that for good time. He's going to be in there for a while, if he doesn't get pardoned. And, at his age, this is no joke of a sentence. This is not, he didn't get away with this, put it that way.
Yeah, he's 69. He's probably going to serve at least 4 to 5 years. Do the math. He comes out. His health is apparently already bad. Prison is not a kind place to anyone, but especially people elderly with bad health. And we were looking at he might come out at the age, if he comes out, 73, 74.
Yeah. So one person who may have gotten away with it to some extent is Michael Flynn. There was an update in his case, too. His cooperation, it appears, is now over.
Right.
Yeah, that's a sign whatever use he had or was of, it's been wrapped up, with the partial exception of he may testify against his old business partner, Bijan, who's being charged for stuff that Flynn is also guilty of. But that's kind of unclear what's going on there. But it's also a sideshow. It's unrelated to Trump. But Michael Flynn is he more than just about anyone, I think, except possibly Papadopoulos, but really, he did some time and he was not in charge of the very serious events. Flynn's getting away with it. He was in office doing crimes. He was the national security advisor and still trying to do shady things that sacrifice America's interests in favor of his own. And he's getting an effective wrist slap. He's not, that's not finalized yet. We'll see. But out of everyone, he's the one who seems like may escape justice the most.
He is what we call a shady mother effer. That's a legal term.
You know what? He flipped quick. He flipped early and he's reaping the benefits of it. It usually is that way. So,
and we're still learning more. I mean, we'll talk a little bit more if we have time in the show about his hand in this alleged nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia. But that was him literally as a national security advisor, still trying to make this very shady deal, which I hope we could talk about a little bit later. So we're still uncovering the extent of his shadiness. But based on what we know and what he already did, you're absolutely right. The fact that this guy might get away with zero jail time is itself a crime. Not registering as a foreign agent, taking money from Turkey to literally kidnap Fethullah Gulen and send him back to Turkey, getting paid by Russia, sitting next to Putin, having backdoor conversations with Sergei Kislyak. I mean, just like this bouillabaisse of bastardly acts. And not to mention him also spreading hateful comments, conspiracy theories, anti-Muslim tweets, leading the lock her up chant. I always love that. I always love reminding everyone that he was the one who led the lock her up chant at the RNC. That guy might get away scot-free because, like you said, he made the plea agreement early. But who knows? Who knows what will happen in that case? Because remember, the sentencing got delayed because the judge at the time just blasted him. And like Michael Flynn got shook. I think almost came close to basically implying what he did was traitorous.
Which, kind of was. But we'll see what happens with him. But to me, what's interesting is that it is wrapped up. With him apparently not testifying against anyone or not needed to testify against anyone outside of his business deal. So we'll see. Rumors of the Mueller report's demise or imminent release have been off, overreported.
Was this supposed to be finished in November, according to then Attorney General Whitaker, and then it was supposed to be finished last month?
It was supposed to be finished Thanksgiving of 2017. So, yeah.
Mueller, just every time he hears that, he just drinks his tea like Kermit. And continues onward.
And Peter Carr is like, sir, should we release a statement? And the Mueller was like, no, go back to work. It's fine. Just wait.
Yeah, go back to work. Do it now.
And your work is to do nothing, to sit there and not say anything but no comment over and over again.
Until I'm fit. Hey, it's smart. It works.
I figure Carr, he's the spokesman for the special counsel's office. I figure his real job is just to collect tweets from Trump all the time. Like, that's what he keeps busy with because he's definitely not giving statements. So most of the time he's there just like watching Twitter and like, Mueller, we got another one, prints it out, adds to the file, goes back to sitting there all day.
And I would add incriminating tweets.
Oh, yeah. Just the incriminating ones. He doesn't bother with the rest of them.
Oh, yeah. We have some tweets to talk about later today, too.
Oh, God. There's always tweets. But first, let's talk about the Trump organization's problems, because Mueller is only one issue right now for the president. The other is the fact that being president, all the shady shit he did before he got into office is now 2 years into his term, getting exposure. And what happened recently, Watch?
Big piece of news that just came out a few days ago when everyone's kind of forgotten is that the New York Attorney General's office on Monday issued subpoenas to Deutsche Bank and Investors Bank for records relating to the financing of four major Trump Organization projects and, of course, the failed effort to buy the Buffalo Bills in 2014. And this new inquiry is led by the office of the new Attorney General, Letitia James. I would like to add that she is a Black woman, which is just so glorious that Letitia James, the Attorney General, and Judge Jackson are two women trying to make Trump's life miserable this week. Just karma is here. And karma has two X chromosomes.
But notice that when Trump did his tweets attacking the investigation, he didn't attack her. He attacked Schneiderman, who's been out of office for how long now?
Yeah, I think he's scared of her, to be honest, because she ran as a campaign that she's going to be tough on Trump. If I was him, I'd be hella scared of Letitia James.
Which, to take a moment here and say, that in itself is concerning, and that's a sign of the times we're in, and that as much as I think that Trump has engaged in misconduct, both before and after his presidency, I'm really troubled by the fact that we have people running for office based on a lock him up kind of strategy. It was inappropriate for Clinton, and it's inappropriate for Trump.
But if there is such an egregious...
Doesn't matter. I am strongly opposed to anyone campaigning on a platform of essentially going to prosecute a specific person. That's just not appropriate in any universe.
But what happens if they say we're going to hold them accountable and at least bring forth oversight?
No, that's still... I mean, you don't have to pledge that you're, like, not going to prosecute them. But, like, comments like that shouldn't be made as part of the campaign in the first place. We don't want people voting for a prosecutor who'll prosecute who they want them to go after. That's not the job. It should not be a political component. I mean, making statements that says we're going to hold anyone accountable for political issues, like, that are vague and refer to crimes, that's appropriate. But the way she sought out and named Trump is deeply concerning to me.
Do you think if there is an appetite by the public that a person like Trump is, say, like Kingpin from the comic books, who just keeps getting away with it and is protected by a Republican Party that has failed in their duty and their obligation to put, you know, security and law and justice above partisanship, then that's why that call to, you know, for justice, and specifically that call to hold an individual accountable and naming that individual, does that in any way factor into your commentary?
No, it's exactly when not to do it. I mean, of course, it's effective. I mean, that's why they do it. But it's also inappropriate. Like, no prosecutor should be run. Like, it as a flat out rule, there is no exception to the idea that a prosecutor should not be running on a platform of promising to indict or investigate anyone.
I see that. I see where you're coming from. Based on principle, I respect
that. It's not even principle. It's just like the prosecutor's job is it's. The powers are vast. The responsibilities are vast.
Very vast.
And
that can be abused and hugely. Oftentimes are abused against those who are poor and people of color in particular.
Making a promise to prosecute someone for political reasons isn't it's just another breakdown in how things should function. I've got enough problems with prosecutors as it is. I don't need to add the fact that they're running on promises to send people to prison.
Let me guess. Are you a fan of prosecutors, Susan?
I am a fan of people that do their jobs right.
I like that. Fair enough. To her credit, she's going to, well, did she really say she's going to target Trump?
I can't say, you know, I cannot say if it, I recall hearing statements about that when the election was going on. I cannot say I recall who was making them. So it may not have been her, but there are definitely worse statements like that being made in New York and elsewhere.
Yeah, it's like kind of the get Trump agenda. You're right. So if you agree or disagree with Susan, Letitia James, at the very least, is standing by that commitment or pledge. And based on Michael Cohen, callback, you thought we forgot him, we didn't. Based on the congressional testimony last month of Michael Cohen, President Trump's lawyer, fixer, consigliere, Luca Brasi, you remember that Cohen testified under oath that Trump had inflated his assets in financial statements. And Mr. Cohen brought a lot of receipts, not just receipts of the checks that Trump allegedly paid him while president, to reimburse him for paying off Stormy Daniels. But Cohen provided copies of statements he said had been submitted to Deutsche Bank. And so this can actually get Trump in a lot of trouble because it's dealing with, you know, the Trump International Hotel in Washington, the Trump International Hotel Tower in Chicago, Trump National Doral outside Miami. And if you guys remember, Deutsche Bank was literally the only bank that would lend money to Trump. Like, he got all of his money from Russia because no one else would, like, touch him. And Deutsche Bank, which has shady connections to Russians, I think.
Well, every bank has its shady connections to Russians. That's what banks do.
But Deutsche Bank in particular has a reputation.
I don't even know if I go that far. I mean, have they been involved in shady deals? Yes, but so have a lot of other banks. In particular, have they had a history of problematic actions involving Trump or potentially problematic actions involving Trump and Russia? Maybe, like, just the... There's a history there, but I'm not sure I'd agree that we could single out Deutsche Bank as the one.
Well, they got fined $10 billion, right, for the Russia money laundering scheme. I think that was years ago in 2017. They got raided in the money laundering probe. I'm perfectly fine saying that Deutsche Bank, more so than other banks, has a very troubling history when it comes to connections with the Russian oligarchy and being used as a money laundering service and has been fined for it. And again, I just want to say that Deutsche Bank was the only bank that was lending or willing to lend Donald Trump money. And Donald Trump also, I just want to always give a call back to this fantastic New York Times huge investigative piece in October that just died because there was it was a 14th scandal of the week that he inflated his wealth that he inherited from his father based on tax fraud. which he, by the way, then later squandered. So there's just like so many crimes sometimes, right, that it's like hard to just keep a track. But I'm trying to do my best for today's podcast. But that happened on Monday, this New York Attorney General opening up the investigation on the Trump projects. And also with the Dems taking over the House, not only do you have Adam Schiff in the Intelligence Committee and Cummings, the Oversight Committee, but you also have, wait for it, Maxine Waters, who is overseeing the Financial Committee. And she's the one who's going to be on top of getting records from Deutsche Bank from the congressional side. I think this is going to be a major thorn in Trump's side going the next 2 years, because it's basically connecting the dots and tracing the money, Susan.
It's going to be actual oversight.
Yeah.
Something he's not used to.
Subpoenas, documents. And you better believe Maxine Waters, a woman that he's called dumb and stupid many times, you think she's going to just sit on it? I don't think so.
Yeah. Trump's not going to be happy. He has been a happy camper for a while. But I mean, I think, you know, despite all the evidence that Mueller's report keeps being reported as being over or almost here and it's not here, it does feel like things are wrapping up. So we will get some answers, I think. I hope. I keep saying that, I know. But the question is, what happens after that? We all want to do the right things to keep our body healthy in the long run. But even if we try really hard to eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, we're most likely not getting all the essential nutrients that we need. And I'm not really trying that hard to eat kale salads or salads, period. Let's be real. But that's where Ritual comes in. It's the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual's essentials have the nutrients that most of us don't get enough from food, all in a clean, absorbable form. No shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm than good. Two easy-to-take capsules provide 9 nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. And best of all, it's super easy to take Ritual because it's a subscription that's delivered to your door. It's easy to start and it's easy to snooze. It's only $1 a day to have all essential nutrients your body needs delivered every month, no strings attached. Better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering our listeners a special discount to help start your Ritual today. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your Ritual today. That's ritual.com/45th. So to me, it's very clear that all these investigations, the ones from the federal level and the state level, the ones in Trump's business, they're all warranted. There is so much going on there. This is not a case of an investigation in search of a crime. It's all these crimes that have been want of investigation for like decades, to be honest. But let's say that the Mueller report comes out and does not lead to anything impeachable.
Right.
Does that, I mean, I'm sure they're just going to pivot then into saying that every investigation is a witch hunt, so they all need to stop, and that where do we go from there? Like, again, election year is going to come up and investigations don't continue in the middle of the election. So 2019 is kind of it.
Yeah, but I still feel like I said this in 2016. I feel like it will be a death by a thousand cuts because the Mueller investigation now has the approval of a majority of Americans. There have been enough convictions. There's been enough indictments. There's enough news trickling slowly, but surely. There's enough just damaging information about the type of people he has around him, like the Scott Pruitts, the Ryan Zinkes, for example. You know, there'll be people with the guilty pleas, the Roger Stones, the Michael Cohens, the receipts. It just adds up.
Counterpoint. They're both gone and Trump's still here and no one's still talking about him.
Yeah, but it still creates this aura that damages Trump. Now, the base doesn't care, which is fine. The base, like we've mentioned before on the show, and I'm very confident about this, will only leave Trump, and only a part of the base will leave Trump once the recession hits. And if you look at the latest signs, it seems like a recession is more likely than not.
I mean, no confidence in our economy. Have not for quite some time. It's a matter of time before things tank.
Yeah, matter of time. And look, his signature policy, the tax plan, was a dud. Has approval rating of the low 30s. The trade war is really like not just hurting the farmers in the Midwest, but now it seems to be hurting, you know, other economies as well. There's going to be a boomerang effect. You see so many Americans who are behind on their car payments, right? And I think it was the Northeast. You're also seeing a dip in housing. This is not good. And so once the recession hits and things get a little bit worse, you're going to see a little bit of that base start like, you know, weakening. And you see enough people, I think in the majority and who are in the sidelines, who are convinced that this is a corrupt, incompetent president who, at the very least, Susan, has some shady dealings. And I think that's enough, along with the weakening economy, to kind of destroy this myth. And I want to use the word myth because it was a myth that elected Trump. the myth of the successful businessman, the myth of, you know, celebrity apprentice, right? It was just, it was all manufactured. And I think, you know, showing him as an incompetent businessman who's corrupt and, like, you know, is dealing with Russia and is not putting America first, and that who's hurting the economy, plus with the Mueller investigation or whatever it shows, because it already has convictions and indictments, and the fact that Trump is kissing up to Kim Jong-un and MBS of Saudi Arabia and Putin, you kind of combine all this together, and I'm still hopeful it chips away enough at this aura that was created of Trump, who's now a 73-year-old man.
He has never been above water since, like, the very start of his presidency, who it was then. He's not popular. He doesn't have majority support, never has, never will. I don't think that's as important as it ought to be in a democracy. But going back to the economy, just to bring back a bit, you know what I still wonder about sometimes? That time, I think it was just before Christmas, when it was Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, issued a statement saying, we want to assure everyone there's enough money. I called all the bank heads, and they promised me there's enough money in all the banks.
Yeah.
Everyone's like,
yeah,
what?
That was December, I think.
Was that pure incompetence? It could have been pure incompetence. But once in a while, like, the conspiracy part of me is like, wait, was there a reason he was calling to check the banks for money? Because the markets have been behaving strangely ever since.
Yeah, it's like, hey guys, just in case, just wanted to find out, in case things go to shit, do you guys have no money?
Yeah.
You do? Let me tweet this out. And the rest of us were like, what?
Yeah.
It's like your dad telling you, like suppose you're a kid and your dad says, hey, buddy, come here. Like, guess what? I have enough money for rent for the next 2 months at least. Okay, take care. And then you're like, what? What the hell's happening? It's just like.
Yeah, it's like someone saying, oh, we don't worry. We're able to handle any tiger attacks that might happen shortly. Like, wait, what? Was not worried about that. Was not thinking about that. But now I'm going to worry about that.
Yeah, yeah. Your kidneys are doing fine. You're like, I just came in for the flu. Oh, yeah, yeah. But don't worry about your kidneys. They're okay for at least 5 years.
So, but hopefully all that happened is that Trump and Mnuchin had, like, a little holiday get together and watched It's a Wonderful Life, and there's no more to it.
No. There's more to it than that. But that's why, like, you know, this is my whole thing is the base. We shouldn't worry about the base because it's about 35% of America. But we shouldn't worry about converting the base, convincing the base, you know, getting the base on message. The base is going to stick with him no matter what, until it affects them personally and directly, until they start feeling the pain, which sadly they will. That's the only time, Susan. I'm worried about the 65%. And I think if you just chip enough at him, right? Because you just mentioned he's been an unpopular president. He's never hit 50, even though he's inherited a robust economy. And he just won the election based on 78,000 votes across three states in the Electoral College. That's it. At the end of the day, if you want to get this guy out, you know, you just take those three states and then some, and he's out. So that's my take. That's me trying to be the optimist here.
Yeah, I guess for me, it also, it's obviously this is all political. There's a lot of politics in everything now. It's always was. For me, at least mentally, I do see a distinction between the investigations and the various aspects and Trump's presidency. Like, the investigations in the Trump organization are long overdue, but it's not about the Trump whether Trump's in office or not, that needs to happen. It's different for Mueller because Mueller's there for both national security purposes and for giving a report to Congress, and that has an eye towards impeachment. So that is different. There's an inherent political element to that. But the idea that using investigations and prosecutions as an electoral strategy, I am not comfortable with, and I think misses the point. I think it makes for bad prosecutions. I think it makes for ineffective prosecutions, and it undermines trust in the system.
What would you like the messaging to be instead?
That these organizations got away with corrupt shit for way too long and need to be held accountable for, and it's not about the Trump presidency per se. It's about the fact that, bizarrely, Trump's it was never a secret that there were things going on in the Trump organization that did not make financial sense and had hallmarks of improper behavior. You know, I guess at the time he was like Manafort. Everyone knew Manafort was up to shady shit, and they investigated him, but they didn't pursue it. God knows why, because white collar offenses in general are under prosecuted and now have reached, I think, what, an all-time low as of January 2019.
You bring up a good point, and I was going to mention this, and I'm glad you did, is that if you just sit back and think about this for a second, you're like, if this shit is so egregious, so transparent, if they were so recklessly doing this out in the open, how come no one prosecuted them before? How come white collar crimes, you know, just to get away with it?
How can they do this all in the open and then feel comfortable enough to run for office or run a campaign? That's the sign that our system is inherently broken.
like, I think you and me would like hide in Mexico or any country and like change our names. Like, what would be your new name?
It would be anything that's not have campaign manager in front of it.
Yeah, I think I changed my name to Guapo just because I'd be a good Guapo. I'd just be like Guapo Ali, chilling in Mexico, just like dying out of shame.
And yeah, like, someone calls me up like, hey, we know it's short notice, but we want you to like get involved in a serious political campaign in America. But like, sorry, I am unavailable for the next forever.
It's not just the incompetence and the recklessness, it's the hubris. And that hubris has to come from an understanding or realization that this is how business works. And they ain't going to get me. Everyone does it.
Yeah,
and
no, they had to believe, despite all their blatant, many, many numerous crimes, that in fact it was a realistic possibility they could do this. Not even possibility, realistic probability that they could do this and not run into legal troubles. That was not just something. Some of them are actually beyond reckless, but some of them, like Manafort, who I'm not going to call the smartest knife in the drawer, but he has been doing it for a long time. He understands risk, he understands the game. He would not have done this if he had not made a decision that actually this can work and he can get away with it. And it did work for a very long time.
When it comes to taking care of your health, all of us kind of go to the same things that we think we're supposed to be doing, you know, eating well, drinking lots of water, and exercising. And of course, those are very important things. But one of the most important things we're supposed to do for our health every single day is brushing our teeth. Yet most of us don't do it properly. Well, Quip can help you do it right, because Quip is a better electric toothbrush that's created by dentists and designers. It was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and actually even enjoyable. Quip has sensitive sonic vibrations. They're really gentle, very gentle for sensitive gums, and that's because people often brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are just too abrasive. They also have a built-in 2-minute timer. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides. Have you been that person? I've done it. I start brushing, I'm just brushing the same side for the longest time. I just kind of zone out. You won't do that with Quip, because it's going to vibrate and let you know. What I love about Quip also is that it's beautifully designed. My Quip toothbrush is white and gold. It's very sleek. I travel with it everywhere. It's got a great multi-use cover that mounts to your mirror, and it completely declutters your sink or cabinet and, you know, makes travel easy. And I love just using it at home because I don't have these big clunky electric toothbrushes now to deal with on my counter. Now, also a reason that I had to switch to Quip was because I am terrible at remembering to buy new toothbrush heads, but I don't have to think about that with Quip, because brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. All right, now, Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. It has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. I've told you so many reasons I love Quip, and I'm backed up by 20,000 dental professionals, so I can't be wrong. Now, Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/45th, you'll get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip, getquip.com/45th.
Speaking of ridiculous schemes that went on for way too long, I want to make sure we get to my favorite part of this week's episode and why it's titled Boy Wonder.
So we were supposed to talk about Kushner the entire time, but Susan said, listen, when we record this tomorrow, some crazy shit might happen, and let's just be prepared. And crazy shit always happens. But yes, this was supposed to be a Kushner episode. But for the second half, we'll definitely talk about Kushner. And the segue was exquisite about like just shady shit happening out in the open and no one does anything. Well, we got hit with Operation Varsity Blues. That is actually the name of the operation that the Justice Department unleashed. It is the largest ever college admissions prosecution, a huge investigation that involved 200 agents nationwide. There's charges against 50 people in 6 states, including Aunt Becky from Full House. Say It Ain't So, Laura Loughlin, Aunt Becky, and her husband, and also Felicity Huffman are involved. It's this huge, elaborate scheme where really wealthy parents went to allegedly fraudulent lengths to get their kids into very competitive American universities, including Yale, USC, Stanford, and other big names. And like, this is, it's stunning. It's stunning because apparently, Susan, they paid this guy, William Singer, he had his organization called Key and Key Worldwide Foundation, to help students cheat on their standardized tests. He paid bribes to coaches who could get them into college with fake athletic credentials. They literally photoshopped their kids' faces on students. Parents paid Mr. Singer about $25 million for the past 8 years to bribe coaches and university administrators to ensure that their kids got a spot in school. Just to give you two quick examples, a teenage girl who did not play soccer all of a sudden became a star soccer recruit at Yale. What was the cost to her parents? Take a guess, Susan.
And Yale, I mean, that probably has a premium, right? So like a couple million?
$1.2 million.
She got a good deal.
Yeah, a student with no experience rowing somehow won a spot at the USC crew team.
The faking soccer one's weird to me. Like, I feel like, I don't know, I'm kind of surprised that could even, I mean, obviously it did happen and I'm being naive, but I have, you know, I'm somewhat aware of how soccer recruiting works. And I wonder how, like, I thought there was more transparency into that. How did the teams not know?
Because how will the teams know, right?
Like, if you're... you know how many recruits you're going to get, like, you usually have some, well... Still, I mean, obviously it did happen, but man, it has been a little bit killing me inside that I've seen that there are transcripts, all the stuff out there, and I cannot read them right now because the bits I've seen look amazing. Like, it's an awful story, but also it's amazing.
It's amazing. No, it's amazing because it talks about it really goes into what you're saying is what kind of happens out in the open. And it is one quick thing before we talk about that. This dude was so sophisticated. He said that how he pitched himself was, he says there's three doors. There's the front door, the back door, the side door. The front door is for us losers who, you know, actually tried to like work hard and, you know, play the system and apply. The back door is hella shady, but legal, is for rich parents who make tax deductible large donations to these universities and wink, wink, they kind of nudge themselves up. It's not guaranteed. And there's also the greatest affirmative action, which is legacy admissions. And he said, his was the side door. He assures you admission. And just one of the things that he did, because like, this is so kind of diabolical, he bribed test administrators. So he basically had these two SAT testing stations that used to take the kids to. The kids allegedly didn't know that they were like, you know, part of the scheme. They just took the SAT score. And then this guy paid the test administrator who was there, and he literally told them the exact score he wanted the kids to get, and then the admin would change the form and give the kid that score.
Like, part of me is like, if the kids are so dumb they don't realize it's a fake test, no wonder you need to fake it.
Some of these kids are hella dumb. They do not seem, you know, I hate saying it, but they do not seem like the brightest bulb. But the reason why, I mean, look, so here's one, before we talk about Boy Wonder Jared Kushner, because he is involved in this in some capacity essentially buying your way into college. Like, we were talking about this. So let's talk about the back door. It's not illegal, but even the kind of Justice Department was like, you know, they didn't do stuff like the normal way rich people do, which is like, you know, giving large donations. And the rest of us were like, wait, what? Like, how come that's like,
everyone
okay.
knows that's a thing.
But isn't that problematic?
No, it's super problematic, but it's also not legal.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. And so, you know, Daniel Golden wrote this book called The Price of Admission. He's a ProPublica editor, about how the rich buy their, what he said, quote, underachieving children into elite universities with massive tax-deductible donations. Again,
this is how the rich do it. Not the medium rich, how the rich ones.
Yeah, not upper middle class. This is top 1%, 2%.
This and is like so, top 0.1%.
Which family member you think did this of the Trump family, Susan?
For who?
Well, I gave it away. It's I already gave it away. It was Charles Kushner, Elder Kushner, who was a real estate developer, actually gave $2.5 million to Harvard in 1998. And magically, Jared, Boy Wonder Kushner, who's going to save the Middle East, was admitted. Daniel Golden, who wrote this article, I recommend people read it, came out about 2 years ago. He did some research, and apparently Jared, according to his high school administrators, was a terrible student who would not have made it on, quote, merit. He was described as a, quote, less than stellar student, and they were all dismayed that Harvard got him in. Exact quote, his GPA did not warrant it. His SAT scores did not warrant it. We thought for sure there was no way this was going to happen. And voila, with a $2.5 million pledge to be paid annually in installments of $250,000, Jared Kushner is now a Harvard grad who failed his way up to being Donald Trump's advisor.
But you know, it's not just Kushner, right?
It's I mean, it's also Trump. How the hell did Trump get into UPenn?
Yeah, and his kids. Tim O'Brien's also been following Trump finances for a long time. He's actually seen, he's the one who's seen the Trump tax returns, but it was during litigation and he can't disclose them. But he also reported on how back in the 90s, Trump pledged millions to, you know, UPenn. And of course, that's where not long after that, Don Jr. and Ivanka were admitted to.
Magic. Magic. I'm sure there were other students. They stayed up late night cramming for the SATs and the AP tests. I'm sure.
But like, if you have $1.2 million to bribe a soccer coach, surely you can pony together like $1.8 million to like give a big enough donation to the college. I feel like we just like punked out a little too low.
Here's my question. You know, Aunt Becky, Laura Loughlin, her and her husband gave $500,000 to USC. My question is this. If you had $500,000, why would you want to send your kid to USC? Like, wouldn't you spend $500,000 to, like, I don't know, UCLA?
Also, like, isn't being related to a famous person, like, at least a tiny nudge up? Like, isn't that enough to get you a bump to somewhere it's not community college?
Well, to be fair, I mean, you know, her daughter apparently bragged on video that she, like, had no interest in going to college or, like, studying for the school's the SATs. And so it's like, oh, Aunt Becky, yesterday was not your day. When there's, like, incriminating video, like, confessions by your kid essentially admitting that, like, you know, they have no desire to go to college. And then you spend $500,000 to send your kids to USC. And unfortunately, you're the one who becomes the face of Operation Varsity Blues. And I have to give a shout out to the name Varsity Blues, an excellent late 90s college movie starring Dawson from Dawson's Creek.
Man, and the thing is, these kids would have been fine. I mean, maybe the one who wanted to go to Yale really wanted to go to Yale, but like, it just doesn't seem like a great investment strategy. Monetarily, I don't see how it's going to pay you back.
At all. But you know, what they said was the way he hooked him was interesting, is he said, everyone's doing it. So why don't you get a leg up? Everyone cheats. So why don't you get a leg up?
I called my parents last night. I'm like, hey, why didn't y'all ever like do anything for me? Like, why didn't you ever try and help me get in? Like, why didn't you even sign up for me for SAT classes? My mom was like, if we had, you wouldn't have gone. I'm like, okay, fair point.
Like, we know you.
Yeah. But I'm like, I don't even recall this being that much. I was in a private school and I don't remember this. Maybe I just blocked it out because I didn't care. But I don't recall. I mean, I vaguely recall a few kids and we taking some prep classes or something. But it wasn't like this.
It just shows you, like, maybe we need affordable quality college education for everyone. Because if the uber rich are engaging in fraud and going to jail, most likely, or at least being, you know, going to get convicted to send their kids to these schools. Well, what about the rest, like the rest of the kids? And I did some research for us. The tuition fees for last year at state colleges are on average about $10,000 for state residents, $25,000 for everyone else. For private nonprofit colleges, it's about $35,000, right? I remember when I went to UC Berkeley, I was in state, it cost about $5,000 a year, which if you think about it, is actually pretty affordable. We could pull that off. But how the hell do you afford college if you're not like uber wealthy? And in addition, you can't pay for the SAT prep courses and you can't pay for the AP courses. And now you don't have this guy who's not going to jail running, you know, this key organization to help multimillionaire kids get to college. Like, am I the only one who's like slightly disturbed by this?
What I keep thinking about is like, how many of those parents complain about affirmative action? Probably at least half of them, maybe more.
No, come on. Like at least
minimum,
3-4.
Minimum, being conservative here.
Yeah. And then legacy admissions, the greatest affirmative action of all time that no one talks about. Because how else would George W. Bush get into Yale?
Donations, that's how.
yeah, donations. Backdoor. 95% of American colleges are too expensive for the majority of low-income students. I'll repeat that. 95% of all American colleges are too expensive for the majority of low-income students. Sucks to be you. You guys should have pulled yourselves up from the bootstrap and had merit and had someone Photoshop your face on the rowing team and then pay the recruiter tons of money. And then maybe your kid could have gone to college.
And it makes me wonder, why was Trump so eager, as Cohen testified, so eager to block any possibility of his college and high school records about how he got into his, you know, prep school and later college, to have those never get released?
And the fact that he, like, how bad must they be? Because he went back to
It's not school. Grades. That's what I'm convinced of. It is not grades. There's no grade. Like, his ego.
It has to be like just so bad. It has to be so bad that like like just the worst student on earth would be like, bro, that's bad. That's just, I'm grateful. At least I got a 600 on the SAT because that is bad. You know what I'm saying? Like it, like the fact that he would go to those lengths as a grown ass man in his 70s to block high school transcripts.
Not just transcripts, his whole record. So I think that there's a maybe it's just his ego makes him do this and it's just the grades. But I think there's more story there and possibly him buying his way into school. It sounds like a plausible possibility.
Okay, so let's talk about some more Kushner news real quick. I want to give a plug to this book. There's another New York Times article. There's so much news that got kind of washed away in the usual chaos. There's a book coming out in about 2 weeks called Kushner Incorporated by journalist Vicky Ward. And New York Times got an advanced copy. And some of the bombshells that they were able to share in this book, which apparently has been 2 years in the making, over 200 people were interviewed. Apparently, Ivanka are not happy about it, is that Trump wanted to initially get rid of Jared and Ivanka. He didn't think they had the right stuff to stay in the White House. Somehow, like herpes, they keep surviving. And the ultimate portrayal of Trump and Ivanka and Kushner are children, I want to quote, forged by domineering fathers, one over-involved with his son, one disengaged from his daughter, who have climbed to positions of power by disregarding protocol and skirting the rules when they can. That being said, Ms. Ward also says that the two are, quote, stabilizing moderate voices in an otherwise chaotic White House, pointing to the time when Donald Trump made those horrible, very fine people, both sides comment in Charlottesville. And she tried to assuage Gary Cohn. If you remember Gary Cohn, the Cohn quote globalist, the anti-Semitic term used by the right wing to describe the Cohn quote Jews who were part of Trump's administration. He was about to leave based on those remarks. And she said, I assure you, my dad's not racist. I think the jury and judge has decided that case already. So that book's called Kushner Incorporated, what's coming out. And I'm looking forward to it, Susan, because I think we still have not focused enough on Jared Kushner, his security clearance, how he's been cultivated by Saudi Arabia, China, Israel, UAE, his opaque financial trail to some of those countries, the omissions in his ongoing forms. I just think this guy is incompetent and reckless, and I will not be surprised if before this is all said and done, he's indicted. Am I being too cynical here?
He, like everyone else in Trump land, has engaged in so many problematic behaviors, both before and after, that it's a question of if anyone feels like they politically can get away with charging the president's son-in-law. He is definitely engaged in similar real estate, not the exact same one as Manafort, but similar real estate issues. So he is too also vulnerable to state charges.
Hi guys, Rabia here. I am here to tell you about a new album that is being released in the most interesting format. It's being released as a podcast and it's called Peace of Mind. So it's a new album from the singer-songwriter B. Beeman. And like I said, he's actually releasing it as a podcast. And it is sort of a soundtrack to this crazy time that we're experiencing in America. The cool thing about this album is every single episode features a different song and conversations with thought leaders and doers about the issue that inspired it. And guess what? I got to be on it. Along with amazing people like religious scholar Reza Aslan, author Dave Eggers, and so many others. There's new episodes available every Friday, so subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Once again, it's called Peace of Mind by B. Beeman. Check it out.
Brother, can you spare some peace of mind?
I'm B. Beeman. I'm a singer-songwriter and producer, I'm a dad, and I'm an American. Peace of Mind is an experiment. It's my new album, but I'm releasing it as a podcast.
I was born on the bottom.
I'll dig into the issues that inspired these songs with guests like Reza Aslan.
None of this is permanent. It could change like that.
And Rabia Chowdhury.
That's America. The great thing is we can do something to change it.
Subscribe on your favorite podcast app and join us for some peace of mind.
So that's all for this week's 45th. We'll be back next week to discuss anything more that's happened in Trump world because, you know, nothing ever happens there.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.